There is something almost smoke too? There is something almost comic about both this candle and the list of apostles that we just heard. We've got Simon, who is called Peter, and we know that he is impulsive and loud, and the man who will deny Jesus three times before breakfast. We've got Andrew, his brother, and then James and John, whom Jesus will nickname the Sons of Thunder. We got Philip, Bartholomew, Thomas, who we know is Doubting Thomas, Matthew. And here the gospel pauses just long enough to make sure that we hear the words, the tax collector. They just really did not want us to miss that. Then there's James, son of Alphaeus and Thaddeus, and Simon the Cananean, which is to say Simon the Zealot. And zealots were a member of the faction advocating for the violent overthrowing of Roman occupation. And then finally, we have Judas Iscariot, the one who betrayed him. Now, that last detail hasn't happened yet. Matthew is just already telling us how the story is going to end. But I want to pause for a brief moment with this list. Because in this list, we have Matthew the tax collector and Simon the zealot. Now, Matthew worked for Rome. He collected the taxes that funded the occupation, that paid the soldiers, that kept the boot on the necks of his very own people. Simon wanted that occupation to end by force. Now, in first century Galilee, these two men did not share a table. They were, in the most immediate and political sense, sworn enemies. And yet here they are, listed together, sent out together, dependent upon one another. And what makes this list strange is not just the members who are on it, but the fact that it cannot agree with itself across the New Testament. If you look in the Gospels and in Acts, there's different lists. Matthew names Thaddeus. Acts replaces him with Judas, son of James. John's gospel offers Nathanael, where others give Bartholomew. And then there's Paul, who calls himself an apostle, and with him it brings the total apostles across the canon to somewhere around 22-ish, depending on how you count. But the counting gets surprisingly complicated. And the church has been trying to tidy up this list for 2,000 years, and it's never really quite managed it. And to say that the lists of the apostles are untidy is an understatement, but I think that the messiness is part of the point. Janine Brown and Kyle Roberts, in their commentary on Matthew, observe that Jesus addresses his 12 disciples pointedly, but that Matthew's audience would have been drawn to understand that many of these teachings were directed toward them. It's directed toward them. And today, it's directed toward us. Matthew is not trying to preserve a museum exhibit. He is writing marching orders. And this list, it's unfinished and it's messy because it was never supposed to stay closed. It includes all of us. And so I want you to consider for a moment what Jesus is actually sending out this unlikely coalition to do. To go out, to proclaim the good news. Now, we hear this phrase, the good news, as sometimes kind of just a passing fancy, something neutral, spiritual abstraction. But the word that we translate as good news, the euangelion, was Roman property long before Jesus touched it. So when Rome conquered a city, soldiers came first. Then, after the fighting was over and the bodies had been counted, came the herald. And his job was to announce the euangelion, the good news that the empire had arrived, that the peace of Rome was now upon you, that your gods had been subordinated to Rome's gods, that your taxes would now flow to Rome, that your young men were eligible for conscription into Rome's armies, and that any resistance would be met with the same force that had just defeated you. Good news. The conquered people of Galilee knew this ritual. Many of them had parents or grandparents who had lived through it. So when Jesus goes to their synagogues, when Jesus stands in their midst and announces that the euangelion of a different empire, the empire of heaven, has come, they understood immediately that he was not speaking of something otherworldly. He was making a direct and a dangerous counterclaim. Jesus looks out at the crowds and he sees them troubled and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. And that, right there, sheep without a shepherd, is a slap across the face of every other person in power. Rome, Herod, the religious authorities who had appointed themselves keepers of the flock, and then just left that flock to fend for itself. Jesus is moved with gut-wrenching compassion. And so, he commissions apostles and sends them out to announce that a different empire has arrived. And what are they sent to do? Heal the sick, restore the excluded, liberate those in bondage, give life to what has been written off as dead. These aren't just spiritual metaphors hovering over ordinary life. They're descriptions of ordinary life where the grace of God has broken through. Think about where this work happens. This work is happening every day in hospitals and hospice rooms, in hard conversations that refuse to abandon someone who is given every reason to be abandoned, in the stubborn insistence that the people our culture marks as disposable are nothing of the kind. We do it when we give without calculating whether the recipient has earned it, without keeping score. Freely you have received. Give without payment. It's a tall order. Simon the Zealot and Matthew the tax collector are sent out together. No weapons, no protection, nothing except each other and the willingness of strangers to receive them. And that dependence is not a design flaw. It is Jesus' design. The empire of heaven does not come into being through domination. It comes into being through communities. Communities that are willing to care for one another across every single line that society says is impossible. This list of 12 has never been tidy. It's still not neat. Contains people who should not be in the same room together, let alone on the same mission. Contains our failures. I mean, Judas is already named, the betrayal already on the horizon, and Jesus sends him out anyway. It also contains each one of us, which may be the most improbable detail of all. So, the harvest is plentiful. The laborers are few. How will you proclaim God's loving and healing empire to our deeply hurting world?